It's been a long time. Been a long time. Been a long, lonely, 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 lonely time.
Some things are better when they rock. Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos. Play 24/7 with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pool, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Been a long time since you rock and rolled? Visit us in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida, or online at SeminoleHardRock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Joy Deo, frontwoman in the Long Beach, California-based band Sweet Nobody. Their most recent album is titled We're Trying Our Best, and it features our former coolest song in the world, Five Star Diary. I'll play some of that now, and then be back on the line with Joy Deo for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and with me today for our coolest conversations is Joy Deo from the Long Beach, California band Sweet Nobody. They're responsible for our recent coolest song in the world, Five Star Diary. Hi, Joy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm hanging in there pretty well. Very, very happy to be chatting with you today.
Thanks.
Now, you are married to your bandmate Brian DeShawn, right?
I am.
So we've all got a pandemic story. What is y'all's?
Well, Brian is a substitute teacher. So he had a lot of lockdown time with me, especially in the beginning of lockdown. We just took the opportunity to write a lot of music, and we would go to a different beach every day and take a walk. It was actually nice in the sense of being able to spend some time together. I have a chronic illness, so I had been kind of in the lockdown in a place of being stuck at home for a couple years prior to actually the lockdown happening. So it was actually, to me, I felt relieved to have somebody else, home with me who could kind of understand what that was like.
Wow. So in a sense, you had some good quality time out of these pandemic months.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you have to kind of take it in stride and just do the best with it that you can. And we have some great neighbors in our building, which really helped as well. Everybody kind of formed a little family. So that was really nice.
Oh, very cool. Well, your new album is We're Trying Our Best. I believe it's your second full length. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first is called Loud Songs for Quiet People. That came out in 2017. Did I get that right too?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, let's see, you guys are based in Long Beach, California. Can you tell us some about how the band got together?
Well, Brian and I met a long time ago, and we started doing music together actually through my cousin. She asked us to play some songs together at her wedding. So that was how we first started playing together. And Brian and I lived in Chicago for a few years and it was too cold. So we moved back to California and we just, Brian had a friend he'd known from before. He grew up in Huntington Beach and we were looking for bandmates, and he asked him if he wanted to join. And just do some collaborating? And he said, sure. And then he knew our bassist, Adam, from work. And he said, hey, I've got this friend who's willing to come and audition. And he came to practice, and that was it. He just never left, so.
You mentioned Adam Nolan, the bass player, and is the other person you're speaking of the Casey Snyder, the guitar player?
Yes, Casey Snyder is our lead guitarist.
Well, very, very cool. So you mentioned Brian growing up in Huntington Beach. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chisago City, Minnesota. It's a very, very small town about 35 miles northeast of the Twin Cities.
Wow. Okay. So were you, was there a lot of music in your household when you were growing up?
Yeah. My folks were, they were singer-songwriters. They played music together and they played music at church. And there was always music in the house, mostly oldies and classical music. And my brother played guitar, and I grew up playing classical violin and singing in choir and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely a very musical household.
So was violin your first instrument?
It was, yeah.
Did you know that Bo Diddley played violin?
I didn't know that.
Well, in fact, I mean, I didn't realize it for a long time, but there's actually a recording where he plays a violin on it. It's an instrumental. I think it's like something called like the clock struck 12. Have you ever used any violin on your earlier album? I don't think there's any on this album, but have you ever recorded yourself doing a pop song with any violin?
Sure. There is violin on the album released in 2017. I did some arrangements for that. And I do still enjoy playing from time to time, but it hurts my back to play the violin. So I don't do it that often anymore.
Oh, well, so let's talk some about the new album. We're Trying Our Best. It was supposed to come out in 2020. My understanding is that the pandemic has sort of delayed that. When did you record it?
We recorded it in 2019.
And the material on it, was that written in 2018? Or, well, you referred to yourself as having this, suffering from a chronic illness. Was, mm-hmm. And dealing with that influenced a lot of the songwriting. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I wrote some of the songs in 2019, I think they were written mostly over a period of 2 or 3 years. But yeah, I have a rare genetic disease called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Mm-hmm. And it was around 4 years ago that it started really impacting my life in a way that I could no longer function normally. And I needed to kind of build my life around being sick, mm-hmm. which was just... really, it just flipped my world upside down.
Right.
So yeah, I did a lot of the songs on the album are dealing with just kind of feeling like I was losing my identity to being sick. And just how do you feel lovable when you lose the ability to do all the things that, you know, we traditionally think as humans give us value. And yeah, that was a lot of what informed the content of this album.
Right. Well, I'm seeing some of that in our recent coolest song, Five Star Diary. Mm-hmm. The lyrics starting off with, I like the way that you talk about me. You seem to think that I'm still wild and free. In your eyes, I'm still a mystery, but I'm so bored with myself. My body doesn't work. I can't catch up. My brain is broken. I'm all messed up. But there you are writing nice things all about me in your five-star diary. So to me, at least, it seems to tie into this sort of trying to come to grips with what's going on and how that impacts others and their impressions of you. Mm-hmm. How far along in the disease's progression did you write this? I mean, what point did this song get developed? How early on towards the diagnosis?
Yeah, at this point, I knew something was wrong. I'd had issues with chronic pain since I was about 14. Mm-hmm. but I didn't have any kind of diagnosis. And I'd had a lot of doctors tell me, well, you just have to come to terms with the fact that it's all in your head, or, you know, they don't have a name for what you have because they don't have a drug for it, or, you know, just saying you just have anxiety or things like that, that were just very unhelpful and made me kind of feel like, am I just crazy? It just makes you feel really isolated. And I think that's something people don't talk about a lot, is the mental component of being chronically ill, because I think that it's just as difficult as the actual physical symptoms sometimes. So I think I was in this place of just feeling like, am I crazy? I know something's wrong, but I can't get anybody to believe me. So yeah, that was definitely, Five Star was written pre-diagnosis. I actually didn't get a proper diagnosis until a little less than a year ago.
Oh, wow. Well, there was something I was going to ask you about this. Yeah. So you're dealing with these issues of that, you know, something is the matter and doctors are telling you, hey, this is all in your head. So I mean, I can't imagine that this has got to be so crazy, a frustrating thing to deal with. And you mentioned the disease you've subsequently been diagnosed of. I have to apologize, I'm not familiar with that. That must have come as a huge relief, though, right? To know that there was a term.
Yeah, absolutely. I, through amazing circumstances, happened to meet a friend when we were living in Chicago who had Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is considered a rare disease. I was working at a little store and she came in one day to buy a present for a friend. And she was just kind of like, we're going to be friends. And she just asked me for my phone number, and she used to bring her kids to take piano lessons from me. And we just developed a friendship, and she, was a massage therapist. So she worked on my body and she was like, you know, I really think that you might have EDS too. And I just thought, there's no way, like there's no way that I randomly meet this person who has the same rare disease that I have, and she would be able to, you know, help me get a diagnosis. So I think it was about 8 years ago that I actually found out what EDS was. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of reading and research, and it's just, there's a lot of confusing information about EDS online because the overview of it is really just vague in general. And there's about, I think, 13 or 14 different types of EDS that you can have. So for a long time, I was just like, no way. And then when we moved back here, I met another wonderful lady through a friend who was having back problems. And I was like, oh, well, could I write to your friend and just offer her some encouragement? Because I've had a lot of issues with back pain and stuff. And the more I got to know her, the more I heard about what her symptoms were. I was like, you know, kind of sounds like maybe you have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Have you ever been tested for it? And she said, I'm in the process of trying to get tested for it right now. So it turned out that she also had it. And she's the one who actually hooked me up with her specialist. Mm-hmm. She wrote to me as well and was like, I really think you have this and you should get checked out. So that was actually how I wound up getting a proper diagnosis, was through other EDS patients.
And so going forward, you're able to manage the disease?
It's a lot of preventative stuff and just maintenance. There's not a cure for it.
Right.
It's a connective tissue disease. So the things that are supposed to hold your body together don't. So your joints will slip out of the socket, and it just causes all kinds of crazy problems. So it's a lot of wearing braces and pacing yourself, mm-hmm. and, you know, knowing when you're about to go into a flare and trying to get a good balance of medication for sort of the comorbid illnesses that it causes. So yeah, it's really more of like, you're going to have to build your lifestyle around having this disease.
Well, Joy, I want to thank you right here for going into, you know, going into depth about the disease.
Sure.
You sharing that with us. Thinking back to the Five Star Diary, I really mm-hmm. love that guitar figure in there. It makes me think of Buddy Holly. You know. So who came up with that?
Probably Brian. We all take turns writing guitar leads, and I lose track of who wrote what. But it was probably Brian.
So I read you cite Feltz, Maurice DeBank, and Johnny Marr, go-betweens as some influences. And when I read Feltz, I hadn't thought of the group in a long time. The album that I learned about the band through was it Forever Breathes, The Lonely Word. Mm-hmm. And at that time I was working as a program director in college radio station, and we had some import service, and this was just a record that was in the box, you know, and didn't know anything about him. And it was like, wow, this is killer. As it turns out, Maurice DeBank was out of the band by then. I still think that the songs on there are pretty great. How did you guys become aware of Felt?
That's all Brian. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of music, and he's got a huge musical library. So when we got married, I just was kind of like, it was a little bit of a musical education for me because I inherited this great library of music. So I was just like, put on anything. I was so astonished to realize that I had a lot broader tastes than I thought I did, because I tend to get really attached to like one album that I want to listen to over and over again, or like one song that's just kind of my jam right now. So Brian is he's our resident DJ.
And did I hear that correctly, that you guys met at a wedding?
We started playing music through my cousin. We played at her wedding, but actually I moved to California when I was 18, and he was the first person I met the day after I moved here at my cousin's birthday party.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So were you playing in any type of groups or bands before you came out to California?
I was in a band in high school. Yeah. We weren't good. But it was fun. And yeah, after I came out, I felt like I wanted to do the singer-songwriter thing, mostly just because I was too shy to share my music with other people, and I didn't think I was good enough to sort of have a band or whatever. So it was really just honestly through the encouragement of a lot of friends who were like, hey, I think what you're doing is good. Like, let's make some demos together. Or people who would offer to play with me or say, what if I booked you a show here, would you play it with me? You know? So that was kind of how I built confidence and how I came to actually have eventually a full band.
So, on the another track is White Lies. Mm-hmm. And as I remember the lyrics there, it's as though, does that have to do with explaining what's going on with the illness, or can you tell me about it?
So that song is kind of, it's a hodgepodge of a bunch of things that were going through my head at the time. Mm-hmm. I actually, at that time, I had a tumor that I didn't know if was cancerous or not. And I had been going through testing for about 7 months. I can't explain the mental toll it takes thinking you might have cancer for 7 months and not knowing. And then in the middle of that, my dad had a heart attack. I think about a week or two before I was due to have surgery to have this tumor removed. So I just was like, I felt so small and helpless. I felt like a kid again. And I just felt like I go out into the world and people see this version of me and they have no idea, you know, no idea what's going on under the surface. So yeah, I think White Lies was a lot about just all of that sort of mixed together.
White Lies, like, I think it's Rhoda, R-H-O-D-A, mm-hmm. Rhoda, very, very driving song on the album. Mm-hmm. Is Rhoda based on a real person or a composite of people?
So Rhoda is, every year for the last 4 years, I think, or five, I make Brian a secret album. I write songs based on movies and books, characters from movies and books, and stuff that we've watched throughout the year, or things that he enjoys. So Rhoda was actually a song from one of his birthday albums that I wrote about the movie The Bad Seed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about this girl who kills people, essentially. And it's sort of about the argument of nature versus nurture. And, you know, are we born inherently bad, or do we inherit it? Or do we learn to be bad? So that was a movie we had watched a couple times that year that we both really enjoyed. We both enjoy the fall time and sort of the Halloween season. So that is a movie we try to watch every year. And Brian just really liked that song, because I think he's the one who generally tends to take my songs and speed them up and make them louder. And it was one that I had written that was already fast and loud. So he was like, that's going on the album.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's not exactly in the same milieu as the other songs, but it is a fun one and it's fun to play.
So playing, do you have any upcoming gigs scheduled or planned?
Yeah, we have a show on the 21st coming up at the Moroccan Lounge. And we just got a booking agent. So he's kind of taken care of all of our booking in the US. And I think our plan is we'd like to travel and play if it feels safe, you know. Mm-hmm. It's still a tricky balancing act, just making sure that people feel safe to come to shows. And we're just taking it sort of one show at a time right now.
Right. And can you mention again where you're playing and where that is at, what the town is?
Yes. So I have to look up where the town is.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm not good with directions. So the Moroccan Lounge, it's in Los Angeles. We'll be playing next. Yeah, on the 21st of October.
On the 21st. I was looking through your Facebook page and I saw that you have played the Wayfair in Costa Mesa several times. Now, that place has gone through a bunch of different names. Have you ever played there in any of its earlier incarnations?
No, we didn't. We never played there when it was the Detroit. I think Casey probably did in his, he used to be in a band called Hindu Pirates, and they may have played there because he grew up in Costa Mesa. But we do kind of, we consider the Wayfarer to be kind of our alma mater, because they were gracious enough to kind of let us cut our teeth when we were just getting started as the four piece that we had become. And they gave us a residency and were always very kind and always give us great opportunities when cool bands are coming through town. So
very cool. You know, so I have a side project band here in LA called The Magnificent. We do a few original songs, but mostly it's 60s soul covers. And we were supposed to play there this coming Saturday, but it's like a Sam and Dave thing, me and another lead singer. And here in LA, the shows have all been, you have to show a proof of vaccination and have on masks. And we had just assumed that was going to be the case there as well. And of course it's not whatsoever.
Right.
And his wife was like, you know, great, you're going to go down there and come back and get me infected. You know, this ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Right?
Totally. And so we wound up having to cancel it. So as you said, it's kind of really touch and go to figure out how to play shows and where it's safe. like for yourself and your illness, you're not necessarily any more susceptible because of your illness to COVID-19 or not?
That's up in the air. I'm in the middle of being tested for autoimmune stuff. So I do have to be careful. I'm on medicine, like steroid medicine, that makes me, can make me immunocompromised. So I do have to be careful. And yeah, it really is. Safety measures vary greatly from county to county here right now. So it's kind of a, you have to feel it out and see what feels safe to you.
Well, the other
show we played was an outdoor show, so I prefer those, I think, right now.
Oh yeah, I do too. In fact, we will play at the farmers market here in LA in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
You know? So that, you know, that's, it's one of those weird things where it's technically it's outside, but there's still, you know, sort of a roof over when you're playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like tents outside with, you know, closed tent sides. That's not really outside, but I think this is more outside than that.
Mm-hmm.
The other track we want to take a listen today to is Little Ghost, which mm-hmm. like a Five Star Diary, that's off the new album, We're Trying Our Best. Tell me some about that. What is it a ghost of?
Little Ghost is about just sometimes when I'm sleeping, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll just like, I'll just feel totally frantic. And I'll just feel like there's something there, or just feel like a weird presence or something. So that song is kind of about that. Just like waking up and being like in a state of panic. And then, yeah, it's weird. It's weird where songs come from, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So when you wake up in that state of panic, how long does it take you to sort of come out of that? Does that keep you up the rest of the night, or are you able to get back to sleep?
No. Well, I'll just usually wake up and then I'll pray and then it goes away and then I go back to sleep.
Okay. Well, Joy, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to give Little Ghost a spin now. It's Sweet Nobody off We're Trying Our Best in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. With some of Little Ghost, that was Sweet Nobody here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. The track is off their latest album, We're Trying Our Best. And this is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's front woman, Joy Deo, for joining me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. And the sweetness will continue for our next interview, where my guest will be Andreas Axelsson from the Swedish band Sweet Teeth. Their debut EP, Acid Rain, is out now, and we'll find out all about it and the band on our next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.